Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
I was away last week. Some of you know that, some of you don't. I was away Thursday through Sunday. I went to Burning Man. I'm a burner. That's what they call us now. I can say it. I am a burner. And for those of you who are not familiar with Burning Man, let me explain. We're going to hold that up there. That's a piece of art there called The Embrace. Burning Man is a yearly festival that takes place in Nevada's Black Rock Desert, where 65,000 people dedicate themselves to the spirit of community, art, self-expression, and self-reliance. The festival is known for the art that is produced prior and put on display during, and that's an example of it right there, The Embrace. There's always something that represents love in that way, but it's named The Embrace. There were weddings in front of The Embrace. People posed in front of The Embrace. And inside each of those beings was a beating heart with valves. And you walk around in there. And it's pretty amazing. And then they burn it down. Different things get burned. See, that bothers you a little bit, huh? Yeah, I know. That's how it is. I went with my friend Lynn, who has attended many times and has been for years trying to get me to go with her. We were part of a group of 67 people who lived together for 4 days. And I could say a lot about Burning Man, but I'm keeping to my time. Scripsy, he's reading, he's praying, he's going, don't digress, don't digress. And I may say more over the coming weeks, maybe. But today I just want to share about one little part. So I said people camp there, and they have concessions. Not everyone, but there you sign up and you are in a concession, and that's what we were. And our concession was called the lemonade stand, okay? And we did two things at our concession, the lemonade stand. We gave you ice-cold lemonade, and we invited you to express yourself through painting. And everyone, I want you to know, everyone who came to our stand was game for the lemonade. Everyone. If you had a cup, we had a community cup, but if it was ice cold, we're in the desert, right? But it took a lot of encouragement for folks to pick up a paintbrush. And this completely shocked me. I'd never been before, right? And in my non-scientific poll, because I was standing at the lemonade stand, and I may have a new... pay attention, Smith. I may have a new job, like dispersing drinks behind a large thing called a bar. So I was really good at it. And I was. And I talked to people. And I'd say, would you come paint? And they were like, oh, no, I'm not creative. I told you the part where 65,000 people who dedicate themselves to the spirit of community, art, self-expression, and self-reliance. Art, self-expression. Would you like to paint? No, I'm not creative. So, we have a few pictures of some people who braved it. Can we? Yeah, there was our art area. Now, that's not scary. I don't think it's scary. That's right behind the lemonade stand. Keep going. He was so resistant. He kept his glasses on. But he painted, and so did she. Look at those faces. Today we begin a 4-week series that's going to unwrap how we can be creative, how we can take our lives and turn our lives into a work of art. We're going to dedicate these 4 weeks to the spirit of art, self-expression, and creativity. And because we are all artisans at work, in case you don't know it, right now in this room, you are sitting in a group of works of art. You. For so long, people have been burned and bored by church, you know? And we hope to move through and beyond that into acknowledging how we are beautiful and created in the image of God, our Creator. People have heard about God, though, being full of judgment. And we want to try and witness to God as the master artist, the central creative who created all of us. We sang it. Beautiful human beings. I'm going to read from the Bible for just a moment. Just one verse, Genesis 2:7. And I want to say, a lot of the translations say, Lord God formed a man. The word is Adam, and it's a play on words, really. Adam is the word for earth. Okay? Does that make sense? So, let's hear this from Genesis 2. Then the Lord God formed Adam from the dust of the ground and breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life, and Adam became a living being. Out of dust, blowing into our nostrils as an act of love, we were created. Every human being is an intentional work of art, informed and formed by the presence of God. So, we're going to begin this journey by looking briefly at another story in the Bible. And it's the story of Moses, and that may seem unlikely on first glance, but I'm going to have Matt share just a portion for us of the story of the life of Moses. And maybe you think you know this story already, but let's hear it together as a community.
A reading from Exodus 2, verses 1 through 15. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, while her attendants walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. When she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. This must be one of the Hebrews' children, she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, Shall I go and get you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, Yes. So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages. So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her son. She named him Moses, because she said, I drew him out of the water. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and saw their forced labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his kinsfolk. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. When he went out the next day, he saw two Hebrews fighting, and he said to the one who was in the wrong, Why do you strike your fellow Hebrew? He answered, Who made you a ruler and judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, Surely the thing is known. When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses.
That's good. So, he sought to kill Moses, and Moses runs away to a faraway land and hides out. And he's there for like 40 years. So 40 years go by, and Moses is out for a walk. You may have heard about this part. And he passes a burning bush, and he hears the voice of God. God appears to him and says, Moses, you are to return and lead your people to freedom from slavery, because I've seen and heard their cries of oppression. So in some ways, I think internally Moses was like, well, where were you way back then? You waited 40 years. What's with this timing? But oh, Moses returns and leads the people to freedom. That's kind of the part we know. Charlton Heston's part of that whole picture. There are a lot of stories in the Bible that we think we know, and that might be one of them, the story of Moses. But I want us to take a little closer look. Moses' life, for like all accounts, the way you heard Matt read that, I think, should have really not amounted to much. I mean, really, think about all those things that he had to go through. And here it is, 40 years later, and he's in hiding. So, he hasn't amounted to much. Don't we know people like that? You know people like that, really? You kind of do, I think. Think about it. That's okay if you're 15, say, or 13. And you meet someone and you have a conversation and you're with them and they say, wow, you're 15. You have such great potential. We know about, you know, right? If you're 25 and someone says something like that to you, you know, you have so much potential. That's still kind of okay, right? You've gotten through school, maybe you've gotten on the other side of some things that people say, you know, you have just everything in you ready to be unleashed. You're 25. If you're 35 and someone says to you, you have so much potential, what they're actually saying is, what's going on? Right? What's taking so long? If you are 45 or 53, like me, and someone comes up to you and says, you have so much potential, you should fall down on your face at that point, because maybe you should cry, because what they're really saying is you have missed out on your life. Because if someone's telling you you have potential at 53, you have not lived the life you longed to live. So Moses is out in hiding 40 years later. And I'm thinking God's saying, you have potential from a burning bush, right? Now we all have our reasons why we let that potential, what, I don't know, languish. It's painful. We heard about that in our music this morning. There's pain in our lives that explains for us why we hold back our great potential. There's pain in our lives, experiences that tell us don't go forward. Just stay safely where you are. You'll be fine. But there's something there because, right, Moses said, okay. Moses was going to go back where he committed murder. So something in him wanted that potential to come up. And I think that longing is rooted in the one thing that distinguishes us as human beings. There's one thing that distinguishes all of us, Moses included, from all the other species on earth, and that one thing is our imagination. It's our imagination. It's the thing that distinguishes us from animals. I think it's true. Think about the lion. right? King of the jungle. Powerful. But the lion does the same thing every day. Lion hunts and kills. That's what the lion does. That's it. The gazelle goes out running every day. You never hear about a gazelle waking up and saying, I'm done with this running. Think about it. Nobody's ever heard of that. A gazelle doesn't go, I'm so tired of this running and running and running, and the slowest one never comes back. I'm done. Tomorrow, I'm going to be a lion. Who's with me? Right? It's never happened. Beavers. Can you imagine them waking up? I'm done with dams. I'm going to do a bridge. Think about it. That's what distinguishes us. You see? Imagination is what sets us apart. Imagination is our greatest strength as well, though, as our greatest weakness. Our imagination can create an image of a world we have never known. And imagine that world as it could be. That image can become so compelling for us that we get inspired and compelled to transform the world all around us, to rise up and wake up and meet the world that only exists in our own minds. Right? And this is rooted in that singular characteristic that distinguishes us from all other species, our imagination. You see, though, sometimes we wake up and we're kind of like, ugh, I just don't feel fulfilled. And that's what happens when our dreams kind of die out and our hope gets tarnished. We live these unfulfilled or unattended lives and we don't see the hope. Instead, it feels like a nightmare, or at least a bad dream. And our dreams are intended, though, to be hopeful, to serve as the material for our imagination. But sometimes they're the material for nightmares. When we are not able or do not create, we live beneath our intention. When we live without intention, we drift and lose ourselves. We just kind of go down the way. Human beings were born to create, not only to express ourselves, but to find out who we are. And that is where the artisan soul is central to our human story. We create not simply because we can, but because we believe we must. Humans are artisans. We must live as artisans, not simply for the purpose of fulfilling our creative potential, but for the health of our soul. I always get emotional about this. I really mean it. When we relinquish or deny our creative essence, we put our souls to sleep. Sometimes we even put our souls to death. We are most alive when we are creating a world we can only imagine. Now, I don't know how that sounds to you all. Because a lot of times what happens is, as soon as you are asked to create, you understand, especially adults, you're being asked to take a risk. And we are risk averse, some of us. A dream costs us nothing until it consumes us. In a few weeks, Matt is going to share at the end on our fourth week the story of the vision that God planted on our souls, a vision of a church that might be, that was only in our imagination, where we thought people might come to. He's going to tell us where we have been and the story of where we are headed. But before we get there, we're going to do some work together. Because when God plants a vision in our soul, we need to do some work on that. I know it's a dangerous thing to choose to make your life a work of art. I know that. But I also know that artisans have no choice but to walk that path. And if you are already in your heads checking yourself off because you're not a musician and you're not a painter and you're not a drawer, stop right now. Because it's not just that kind of art I'm talking about. I'm talking about where we work and where we live and how we love, how we bake, how we speak to each other, how we drive, everything. The artisan soul lives deeply and authentically everywhere they are. And the artist always tries their best to be true to themselves and to God. And the only material a true artisan really needs is that which comes out of our souls. I'm going to say more about that in the coming week. Everything we humans create is something that comes from our own imagination and universe. So, our hope is that together we will be able to start being more aware of our creative essence over these weeks. Because the artisan soul knows that the creative act, it's not just because you like the color pink. The creative act is a spiritual act. Those things go together. The artisan soul embraces our humanity and our imagination as a gift from God. And in so doing, we become co-creators with God. You see, when we engage life as a creative act, we are most like God when we choose to create that which is good and beautiful and true. So I'm going to take us back for just a minute to that unlikely guy I started with, Moses. I want to lift up for us one more time his beginnings, okay? He was born when the Pharaoh said, kill all the boys. That was his birthright. So after hiding him, the midwives who helped birth him, they hid him for 3 months. He had every reason not to survive. But his mother imagined a world that no one else imagined. And she put him in the reeds of the Nile River. And she didn't just abandon him. It says she watched. And in my family, we would say that his birth mother watched over him in love and placed him in a place where she hoped he would thrive and succeed. And what happened was exactly what she hoped. That's just how creative she was. Someone came and found little Moses. And that someone just happened to be a member of the royal family, the Pharaoh's own daughter. And she's creative too, because she names him Moses, which means drawn out. We have Adam, that means earth. And Moses, which means drawn out. He was loved and raised through the creative acts of the midwives, his birth mom, his adoptive mom. That's how God works. Snatching victory from the jaws of unlikelihood. I read that this week. God does it all the time. First from the reeds, and then ultimately from a burning bush. There's even that play, reeds and bushes. Moses had every reason not to say yes to God and to turn away from his artisan soul. He had a cushion life. He was in the home of the Pharaoh. He could have looked the other way to the suffering and not done that whole murder thing, not cared about people. He didn't need to be a leader. His own life was compromised, though, by that murder thing. And so how could he expect anyone to look at him as a leader? He would never go back there. There's another reason. Don't listen. He was riddled with guilt. for what he had done. If he said yes to God, he might go back and screw it up, fail. How embarrassing and horrible would that be put to death? If he said yes, he'd be open to people's judgment. That's not the way you lead. Why didn't you start this way first? Why didn't you organize us better? Why didn't you give us to-do lists? It's hard to be a leader. If he said yes, would there be any payoff for him? Because, you know, we do things just for ourselves, really. There needs to be something under there. The safe answer for Moses was no. The next time any of us wonders, can God really use poor, insignificant, uncreative me? Remember Moses. If God can save a whole people through a baby snatched from a basket who was supposed to be dead, who murdered someone, who ran away and hid from God, then God will find you too. And God will engage with each of us, every one of us, to create the world that God imagines. See? And that's a world that's rooted in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. And we're going to try that right now. Oh, we're going to try it right now. The musicians are going to get in their place. So here's how I would like you to relax into this. And I'm fun, but I really mean it. It's not easy. Some people are comfortable with paintbrushes, and some of us aren't. So I bet you've noticed some paper and colored pencils already, right? Do you see those? Those are for you. And we're going to have a few different opportunities. So those of us who are going to stay in the pews are going to be journaling your soul. All right? And the questions that I want you to journal about are going to be up on the screen in a moment. All right? Those of us who want to paint, we have a couple of places up here, and you're going to have 4 weeks to do this. So you don't all have to do it today. Painting, you'll see a prompt, is different than journaling. And I want you to paint the colors that express the hope you have for your life. Colors. I'm not asking you to draw. I would like to encourage you, if you are wanting to try this, if you are right-handed, to use your left hand. If you are left-handed, use your right hand. That will help you stop judging yourself right from the start. For painters, okay? Really, just let it go. If you don't want to paint and you don't want to write, we have the place for you. There are four prayer walls in this sanctuary. Each wall has a prompt for you to simply stand in prayer and read. And there are small cards for you. Please take one and stick it in your pocket or purse and try to live that out this week. There'll be new cards next week. So, you may stay right where you are and your prompt is on the screen. You may move to paint, and your prompt is on the table. You may go to the walls. Your prompts are there. Or you may pray at our candles. And while we do this, these two people are going to improvise something that is not written, that they don't know yet. So you will be surrounded by people making their own art through music. And we're going to be maybe a little late. It's okay. We're going to at least take 12 to 15 minutes. 12 to 15 minutes. Am I on the clock? We got that. We can do this. It's okay. It's okay. 12 minutes. Let us pray.
You make beautiful things out of us.